Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. It is finally time for the Liberty Mutual Music City Bowl. Tennessee taking on Illinois. And to help us talk more about the Vols, we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Adam, good morning. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas. How are things going?
I did. It's sort of weird to be back on Central Time, but I'm here in downtown. It's always weird too to be back in Nashville, but staying in a hotel.
Yeah,
you know, you feel like you're in the guest room in a house, in your own house. But is what it is. I'm ready for a game.
The better time zone, right? We can all agree.
It seems more natural. Yes.
There we go.
Yes.
11 a.m. college kickoff. NFL kickoff.
I like it. It's good stuff. So, Adam, what most interests you about today's matchup between Tennessee and Illinois?
Well, is it going to be like the 21 Music City Bowl? I think it was 45, 42, 48, 45, something like that, the overtime game that Tennessee lost to Purdue. Because that game was, I think it was like 1,300 yards of total offense combined. 90-something points. The setup to this one is similar to that. You've got two defenses that are missing a number of guys because of opt-outs and injuries. You've got two quarterbacks, that can sling it. They can put up a bunch of points, a bunch of yards. Particularly the secondaries, I think, could be susceptible. That's how it sets up. Now, we've already seen the last couple weeks. I mean, bowl games are unpredictable, so we could also get a team gets up by 10 and then just sits on the ball and runs it and finishes it out and tries to get to a pretty critical off season as quickly as they can. But the setup of it is it's going to be, a high scoring game. And I'm interested to see the quarterbacks. There's very few bowls. If you think outside of the playoffs, there's very few bowls that have like two top 20 quarterbacks that are both playing. Cause most of those guys are opted out. Or they're headed to the portal. Both of these guys are here, and there's interesting circumstances of the reason that they're both playing, but we both get them, so we see the two of the best in a bowl game.
So one thing that I do like about this era, even though obviously it stinks sometimes and great players opt out and all that stuff, it does create more opportunity for some guys who, in the past it's just like they get to do the bowl practices, but now they're actually playing the game. How about a few guys today, Adam, on the Vols side, who fans haven't seen a ton of, but who may be important going into next year?
Yeah, some guys catching passes and defending passes. That's the freshman that you'll want to look at. At wide receiver, Chris Brazel opted out. He'll be an early round draft pick. And so you're going to see Redarius Jackson and Travis Smith, two freshman wide receivers who played a little. Both have been injured some this year, but the chances are one of those two guys are probably starting next year. And so you'll see both of them today. I think that could affect maybe the coverages that you see with Braylon Staley and Mike Matthews, because those guys have been a little looser in the middle of the field in a good way because there's been so much attention at Brazel. So I'll be curious to see how that affects the passing game. On the defensive side, Trey Poteet. There could be a couple of freshmen over there, but Trey Poteet especially either will get the start or he'll play, starter snaps at corner with Colton Hood out. And the thing is, Ty Redmond is your other starting corner. He's a freshman. He started almost all year. But that means you're going to have two freshmen back there at corner in a secondary that, was close to the worst. I think it was the worst pass defense in the SEC this year. So I'm sure Luke Altmyer, Illinois quarterback, looked at the film and then looked at the opt-outs and said, I can do something against that defense.
So, Adam, we're just a few days away now from the portal opening. We've kind of bounced this around here on the show in terms of Heupel and quarterback this offseason and what should be done here. You've got, obviously, Merklinger has hit the portal. That's not unexpected here. But you've got Faison Brandon coming in. You've got George McIntyre, who has been a guy that people around here have been very excited about for a long time. But two very young guys at quarterback. So if you're Heupel in what could be a pretty critical year for him next year, how do you handle quarterback? Do you ride and go with one of those two? Do you go be pretty aggressive in the portal and try to bring in a veteran starter? How do you expect things to go here for Tennessee?
Well, the problem they have is they're trying to thread the needle. I mean, you know, coaches are learning. We're all learning how this works every year in the portal and NIL. And some schools are going with the, we're going to get a highly touted recruit. We're going to start him early. We're going to bring him along, and we're going to live with the consequences of it. Other teams are just saying it's free agency every couple of years. We'll just go get a guy in the portal every 2 years, recycle. Tennessee's trying to do both, and that's the problem. Now, you could say Nico got them a little off schedule that he left, but there was a reasonable chance that he was going to leave in the draft after this year anyway. So they needed to have a plan. They hoped McIntyre would maybe be ready to start as a redshirt freshman, like Nico was. He's not there yet. He's still a little underweight. He's developing. I mean, they like what they see, but, you know, I think it looks like they're going to go get a transfer. And, I mean, again, when you're threading the needle like that too, then you're going to have a lot of NIL money tied up into a five-star freshman, a high four-star redshirt freshman, and then a transfer. I mean, that's millions and millions of dollars tied up in one position where only one guy is playing. But it looks like that's what they're going to do. I mean, that's all signs point to that. I do think if Tennessee had gone 10-2 this year, gotten the playoff, I think it would be a little more palatable to say let's go into the next year with these young quarterbacks and just see how things go. The fact that they were 8-4 this year, I think, puts a little more pressure on Josh Heupel to make sure he's not 8-4 or 7-5 next year. And if he thinks one of those young quarterbacks is going to have enough growing pains that they're going to lose some games, it gets a pretty tough schedule next year. You just can't do that. You got to go get a veteran quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I mean, I think that would have a shot to be the most expensive QB room in all of football. Right? There can't be too many teams, and I don't know. I mean, there's probably some other teams with somewhat similar situations, but to have the recruit of the level of Brandon coming in, a holdover who is a big-time player, and then you're still going out and getting a starter, it just that is a huge hit to the cap. And you know, maybe this the CSC or whatever, are they gonna have an issue? Are the ball's gonna be in? Yeah, they've done a great job of enforcing these.
It's all legitimate.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Totally. So
And the added issue to that is Jim Knowles comes in. He needs talent on defense. They knew regardless of who the defensive coordinator was going to be, they were going to have to overhaul a lot of that defense or upgrade it. And so, you know, you could spend as much money if you're talking about third-party NIL, but you still got to go and find it. And so it's hard if you're going to pay like $4 million for a quarterback when you're already paying a lot for your backups. You know, you've got to leave some money there to go get at least a safety, a nickelback, maybe another corner, maybe a linebacker, a couple defensive linemen, you know, a running back. So most of the money needs to be spent on the defensive side. And if you're spending high seven figures at quarterback, that makes it a little tough.
So is there anybody on the quarterback front that you like or think could – I know the Drew Mestemaker kid from North Texas is out there. You know, Byron Brown, I think a lot of people think, is just going to go with Alex Golish to Auburn. But is there anybody who has caught your eye who you think could be a particularly good fit?
Yeah, I mean, you could say any of these guys that are, Hoover, TCU. Sorsby is the obvious one. A lot of people think he's going to go to Texas Tech. You know, Mestemaker is probably going to follow his coach. I mean, that's to say, we look at all these quarterbacks, and as soon as they go in, they announce they're going into the portal, everybody says, oh, well, that guy's probably headed to fill in the blank. For one reason or another. Like, Sorsby would be the best fit. I'm sure Tennessee, that would be their number one choice out of Cincinnati, but we think he's going to go to Texas Tech. There's a chance he could go to Tennessee, but, you know, Texas Tech will be probably the highest spender or one of the highest spenders. Miami's going to spend a lot of money, so you're dealing with that. I'll be curious to see if these guys choose the place that we think they're going to choose. Or if it's a little more unpredictable. There's so many quarterbacks in the transfer market this year that they're all raising the price of each other. But at some point, the pool's going to get diluted. I mean, for the money, Tennessee probably may be better off to go get like a mid-major type guy that worked out with Joey Aguilar. You would get them cheaper. But for now, they're trying everybody else. I mean, the funny thing is when Nico left back in the spring, Tennessee looked around and sort of hoped somebody would jump into the portal that they could get. And a lot of those guys that they looked at back then, including Luke Altmyer, by the way, a lot of those guys, some of those guys are back in the portal now. And so they know those guys already. They've already scouted them. And maybe they get one of them this time with more time and quite a bit of money to spend.
Well, Adam, you mentioned next year and how important it could be for Heupel. I mean, obviously the last taste Tennessee fans have in their mouths is getting crushed by Vanderbilt at home to close out the season. There's a lot of mad Tennessee fans after that. With the administration and with Danny White, how do you think they're looking at Heupel and the program right now? And how important is next year in terms of getting back into the playoff mix as it relates to his future and where things could go?
Yeah, I mean, the words you don't want to hear is plateau. You don't want to hear stagnant. And those are sort of words with question marks right now with Josh Heupel's program. I mean, if they win today, it would be the winningest four-year stretch for Tennessee since, I think, 01 to 04. So coming right off of the national title just 3 years before. They could win 9 games and it's a disappointment. That's good. But it's sort of symbolic that they're in the Music City Bowl because that's where they were Josh Heupel's first year. It looks like a sign that they're going in reverse a little bit now. Now, the thing is, in the portal era, it's not build over a long period of time. It's fix, and you can fix it in one off season. They fire Tim Banks. They bring in Jim Knowles. We'll see how that works. They've got a chance in a few days to upgrade their problematic units, which is a lot on defense, and we'll see if they do anything with quarterback. But the offense is back where you wanted it to be. Josh Heupel was built as an offensive guy. It looked great this year. You've just got to fix the problems. And so next year's, I mean, it's a pretty pivotal year. They have a hard schedule next year. They had a soft schedule this year. And with that soft schedule, Tennessee was, I think they were 7-0 against teams with losing records. In the FBS, they were 4-0 against teams with winning records. So they lost all the good teams and beat all the bad teams. ETSU was the outlier there, the FCS team. But today, if they win, it's the first win they'll have this year over a team with a winning record. And so you need to get that done because if you don't, you just look like a middling team.
Well, speaking of Vanderbilt, your former beat before you turned traitor and moved to Knoxville.
Yeah, I heard.
Yes.
You heard from a lot of people.
We've got a listener, and we've had a few people ask about this. Why did Tennessee refuse to practice at Vanderbilt, Adam? Is this a controversy brewing? Did Josh Heupel, like, slap Clark Lee's hand away and say, no, thank you, sir. We're going to BA.
I mean, they've been at NBA other
NBA.
Years. They were there in 2016. I think the even years they're at NBA and the odd years, I'm talking about the SEC team, they're at Vanderbilt. So I think this should have been a year that they would be at Vanderbilt. I think what Brett Bielema said is probably accurate. I haven't looked into it, but, I mean, leading up to the Music City Bowl, we all said, like, they're not really going to go to Vandy, are they? And they didn't. And, by the way, if they didn't, good for everybody, because that was a little awkward in 21 when they beat Vandy and then were practicing there. It would be even more awkward now to, you know. I don't know if Diego Pavia is hanging around there, but you don't want to run into the guy during your practice.
Just double middles. He's sitting there looking over the fence.
Heupel looking up, waving to Clark Lee in the window. Hi, Clark.
I did get his package in the mail. It was after the Heisman, unfortunately.
I didn't
check my mail, but. I got a two-turned hat. I got the T-shirt. I got the towel. I got all the Pavia gear. That's going to go to a friend of ours, I think, today.
But, oh, good.
I'm going to donate it.
Oh, Bev's not going to wear that stuff?
Nah. What's funny is we did the Dirty Santa gift-giving thing at Christmas, family Christmas. A number of Tennessee fans in the family. And I brought the two-turnt hat.
Yes.
Somebody opened it and said, no, thank you. I'll take the I'll take the throw pillow over there.
Does Bev think that Pavia is like a spawn of Satan? Long pause.
Yeah, you know how this goes. I keep giving the if he was your guy, you would. And before I can get it out, no.
Oh, she. Yeah. You are so right. That you would have to win this argument. Oh, you are so right.
He is the Tennessee fans pause on this one, but Vitello. I mean, you hate him, but if he was your guy, Steve Spurrier, if he was your guy, it's a different element with Pavia, but still, if he was your guy, you would love every part of him. By the way,
he'd be the most beloved Vol ever, dude. After Peyton Manning.
And Pavia is so un-Vandy. I covered Vandy for a long time. He is so un-Vandy, and the fact that Vandy fans are like, that's our guy. That tells you that works at any fan base.
Oh,
that
yeah.
If you win, whatever he is, we're for that.
Exactly.
That's right. Adam, enjoy yourself today. Get you some hot chocolate out there. It's going to be cold, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Adam Sparks from the Knoxville News Sentinel, our guest here on the program.
We got to get Bev on the show. I love you, Sparks, but we're going to start booking your wife, actually, instead. We got to have this argument with her.
Step aside. We'll react to what Sparks had to say coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. We have the Rex Rant coming up later this hour. Charles Robinson will be with us at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit, normally on Thursdays. We'll not be on Thursday this week. It'll be on Tuesday. That's how that works. Appreciate Adam Sparks for being with us in the last segment. As he mentioned, it's we're a few days away, Joe, from a pretty interesting offseason for Tennessee. I mean, the portal opens up, I think, on January the 2nd. So that's right around the corner here. You got the game today. As it's a bowl game, as Adam mentioned, in the playoff era, that's lost a little bit of its luster. And you see players opting out, and Tennessee's had their – fair share of players opting out. I am interested to see some of the young guys at wide receiver today. They were really high on those guys, and they got to play a little bit this year. But as he mentioned, got some injuries throughout the year. But, I mean, one of those two I think are going to be starting next year alongside Matthews and Staley. And, the money part of this is interesting, right? Like, it's a new era of college football. If they go out and they try to get a starter in the portal at quarterback – as you've talked about, that's a lot of money to tie up at that position. You got a lot more people to bring in and money to add, I think, on the defensive side of the ball. And then, Joe, as we know, we're getting ready to get into renegotiation season here in college football, too. And like, I don't know what's going to happen, but it happens every year in college football. If people play better than maybe the expectations were heading into the year, well, they go right back to the negotiation table. And I wonder, like, if you're Matthews or Staley, with the year that you just had, you're probably going to Tennessee this offseason and asking for more. So, I mean, I think it's important they keep those guys, so you do it. But at some point, you're getting low on the money, I think, if you're Tennessee, with all the money you could be spending this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I guess with Matthews, that was the big thing last year.
Yep.
Like, does that take care of it?
Maybe.
I mean, he had a good year, but – like, I guess you wonder if they did enough last year.
Maybe.
I don't know. But yeah.
Staley had a great year. I would imagine whatever Staley got last year is probably going to be coming up this year.
No doubt. Yeah. Now, they did lose some – it's not like a positive, but they did lose some players on defense who were really good who probably got paid
a lot.
Did. So, like, you have that. But, yeah, and that's the thing, too. When you get into, like Sparks is saying about, Brendan Sorsby of Cincinnati – if you're competing with – it's not just like Texas Tech and Cody Campbell, a multi-billionaire, but it's also a team that is like, you're our starter and like we have to have this guy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so they're probably going to pay him – I mean, I think this year we're probably going to be looking at, $4 or $5 million for some quarterbacks. Now, Pavia says he got offered $4.5 million last year by somebody. Don't know by who. He did say other SEC teams offered him, and he put that number out there, but – $4 or $5 million. If you're the Vols and you pay that for one of these guys, plus whatever you're paying the other guys, it's just a lot of money. So then, yeah, you hope, I guess, like Sparks said, you can hope to get lucky with an Aguilar type ad
yeah.
that probably isn't, you know, it's more like a mil or a mil and a half or whatever. But I just, you know, who's out there who's going to fit that bill? Maybe the, you know, if the Mestemaker kid does actually look around, I don't know.
Well, the philosophical part of this that Sparks brought up is going to be interesting moving forward with what Heupel does, because it does kind of feel like they're trying to do both right now of threading the needle of recruiting high-level quarterbacks, which there's nothing wrong with that. You recruit high-level quarterbacks. But also, like, I think everybody reading the room right now understands that they're going to have to win next year or it's going to get uncomfortable around there. So, I mean, the likelihood is, Joe, they're going to lose one of those guys, whether it's Brandon or McIntyre. That's just the way – it's the name of the game in college football right now. So, whether it's this year when they go out and get some veteran starter and one of them decides to – you know what, that's it. Or next year when you have to name one of them the starting quarterback and the other one's like, yeah, all right, I'll see you later. Like, they're going to lose one of them.
Yeah, for sure.
So you've got to, you know, at some point if you're Heupel, because Sparks is right, we have seen this. There are programs out there, and I think Miami definitely is one of them, where you're looking at it and it's like, yeah, we're just going to go buy a quarterback every offseason. And that's the way they're doing it. There are others that are – they're still bringing in high-level recruits, and they're letting those guys develop. And then you've got some outliers like Simpson at Alabama, who just sat there for a couple of years, and it worked out really well for him. I think he's probably in the minority of how that's going to go moving forward here. But, like, philosophically, how you handle trying to manage your quarterback room moving forward, I am very interested to see how Heupel can – if he can thread that needle – or if it's going to require some change in how he approaches it.
Well, I think it's crazy to just be like, we're just going to get in the portal every year, because you might just lose out on option one, two, and three. Look at Tennessee. They got lucky. They lost out on a bunch of guys that they tried to get when Nico left. So, like, you have to be serious every year about getting a big-time quarterback if you're going to be one of these top programs. And then you get into, yeah, like, how long do you wait? And does this one more year when the kid's like a whatever second year of a veteran, is that enough to send him packing? Or are you okay with maybe a little bit of a shakier year or gamble a little bit on the younger kid? I think Sparks is probably right. If Tennessee was 10-2, was playing the playoff right now, there's a better chance that you would feel more comfortable, like, okay, it might work out, and then we'll have more money for other stuff, so let's go, McIntyre. And Heupel just obviously can't feel comfortable. He fired his DC. That's another sign. He understands, like, you know, hot seat, that might be a little bit stretching it, but a fan hot seat, he's on it.
Yeah. Well, and it, you know, the schedule is not friendly next year.
No.
So, you know, I mean, you look at it, and I have no idea. You know, by the time they're playing some of these teams, you know, they could be playing Alabama and their starting quarterback gets hurt. I have no idea what's going on. But, like, 7-5 very much is on the table next year when you're looking just straight up on paper some of these matchups right now. So I think with the roster, there's a lot of turnover that's going to have to happen. Like, defensively, I'm really interested to see how much different they look next year, because to me, they need to go out and spend – pretty high-level money on a safety. Safety, they have been weak for a long time.
Yeah, that's been a bad spot.
They need to go get a safety. They probably need to go get at least one corner, because as Sparks just mentioned, they got some young guys, and I think Redmond got a lot better from where he started to where he ended the year, and they've got some talent with some young kids in that room. But, like, we know, like, Boo Carter's gone. Like, they're going to have to go find another corner or two as well. So and that's not even factoring in – like the five guys that they're losing at defensive tackle that have been there forever.
Which has been a constant and a strength for a while. And
there's a lot of work to do.
That's a lot. That's a lot of work. And then you bring in the new DC. High expectations for this guy. If you make a move like that, you expect to snap your fingers and be way better.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Take more of your thoughts on the Vols. Plus, what feels like a season-defining road trip underway for the Nashville Predators, and they got a good response last night. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Preds remain hot. They go into Utah last night. They get the 4-3 win in a game that was – back and forth. Utah dominated portions of it, and the Predators end up coming away with the win anyway. Two goals in the third period from Steven Stamkos. And by the way, he has scored, I believe, 11 goals in the month of December. He's got six game-winning goals since December the 1st, which is the most in NHL history in a month. He ties Johan Franzen, Brian Propp, Mike Bossy, Bernie Jeffrion, and John Beliveau for the most game-winning goals in a month. So Stamkos is rolling right now for the Predators. They have won 11 of their last 16, and he scored two late big goals last night. Here with Steven Stamkos after the 4-3 win for the Predators against the Utah Mammoth.
That's a good team over there. They move the puck well. They possess the puck a lot. So it's one of those games where you have to come into it knowing that there might be some shifts where they sustain some pressure, and you can't let it get to you. And they certainly did that, but we didn't break. We stuck with it, and we talked about it in the second intermission. Whatever happened in the first two, it's over. We got a chance to come out and just play solid and, you know, try to collect some points here. This is a tough road trip coming off the break for our group. So wins are huge, and that was a big response for us in the third.
So a game the other night, Joe, where they did not get the result they were looking for against the St. Louis team that prior to that they have dominated so far this year. They are in the midst right now of a road trip that I think in a lot of ways is probably going to define where they go. It started actually in Minnesota. They got the win, then went on the Christmas break, picked it up in St. Louis. They get the win in Utah last night. So that's game number three of this road trip, and they're not done anytime soon. They got Vegas coming up tomorrow. They got Seattle on Thursday, Calgary Saturday, and Edmonton next Tuesday. So it's a long road trip. They're not back home until January the 8th against the New York Islanders, and they're playing throughout that stretch some pretty good teams. Vegas certainly coming up. You got Edmonton at the end of it. Seattle and Calgary kind of sandwiched in the middle are two teams that if the Predators are going to find a way to make some noise and make this interesting down the stretch, they need to win some of those games. But, you know, we've talked about it. They're playing better hockey. And Stamkos in particular right now is playing great. Like, he's got 11 goals this month, and he looks like Steven Stamkos. Like, this is by far the best he's played in a Preds uniform.
Yeah, and it's like you see it, and it's like, how does that ever go away? And I know we've talked about it, that you have to, you know, you have to give him in situation. You have to have someone who can get him the puck, but it's like old Stamkos. It's like what he is. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a goal scorer. And it's not like, you know, like over the years, you know, Forsberg will have these heaters and stuff, you know. He's kind of a little bit he's a streaky guy, you know. I guess everybody is to some extent, or can be to some extent, but this just seems like just what he is. Is this what – have they figured out, like, this for the rest of the year? On his way to a huge season? And yeah, if so, what does that mean?
I mean, it started so slow for him that, you know, I don't know that he's going to reach, like, you know, 35, 40 goals or anything like that. But, you know, after – I think he had one goal in his first, like, 14 games. And now he's up to 17. Like, he's climbed his way to 17 through 38 games. So, like, I mean, right now he's on pace for, like, 36 goals.
Yeah, like, high 30s.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I mean, he's playing great right now. And, look, they've needed it. They've needed him to play this way. O'Reilly continues to play really well. Forsberg's playing well. So, I mean, when you're highly paid guys are playing well, this is what you get. And – you know, I'm interested to see how much they can keep it up. Like, I mean, if they run through this road trip and let's say they find a way to get a point tomorrow and they lose in overtime against Vegas and they do what they should do and take care of business against Seattle and Calgary, who are not very good. I mean, they're kind of right there with them, kind of below them in the standings right now. You win those games. Like, if you come out of this in totality, what is a seven-game road trip – with four or five wins, that's pretty good, man. And then I think you have to start asking the question of, well, what does that mean when it comes to this playoff race? I mean, again, they get the win last night against Utah, so now they're only 1 point behind them. San Jose holds the last wild card spot right now. They're 3 points in front of you. You got a game in hand on them. Like, all of a sudden, they have crept their way back into a playoff race.
Bye, bye, bye!
Here we go. That scared me, by the way. Startled me. Yeah, here we go. The Preds making a run. You know, maybe add somebody at the deadline and get it rolling. I mean, look, I agree with like Buster here on the text line. Preds win or lose went from unwatchable to very watchable. And Trotsky isn't crazy as most thought. Yeah, well, this is important for him, and it also makes things really interesting. I agree with what Caleb said too. Although, I mean, it's easy to sit here and say that, but it's like, why would Stamkos ever be on a line that doesn't include Ryan O'Reilly? Right? You watch it now, and it's like, of course that has to be. But they also have had stretches where it wasn't working. So yeah. You have to remember that too.
I don't know what they've done that is getting him the puck. Well, I mean, some of it's him, right? Like some of it is. I think, and he talked about this after, I think, the Minnesota game. You know, he's been used to, for so much of his career, especially like the latter half of his career, he hasn't had to, I guess for lack of a better term, get to the hard areas because he's had Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov doing the work and basically feeding him over there, and he's blasting it away. And we've seen it. Like, he's not lost his shot, right? Like, he'll still rip a couple, and it's like, yep, that's why he scored – darn near 600 goals. By the way, he's at 599. He will become the 22nd player in the history of the league to hit the 600 mark, whether he does that tomorrow or at some point on this road trip. So pretty impressive stuff there. But, I mean, last night he's right in the middle of the slot. The Minnesota game where he scored the game winner in overtime, it's a 2-on-1, but he's right in front of the net. Like I think he's changed the way that he's kind of attacking a little bit. And I don't know that he's ever going to be like some huge – net front guy, but he's changed up the way he's approaching it, and it's clearly working right now.
Yeah, I mean, though, you know, those guys, you talk about creating space and opportunities, you're not going to get much better than that. So yeah, good for him for adjusting. But I mean, like, I feel like, as we've talked about, like just Evangelista, the whole thing is just working really well,
and he had a goal last night too. So I mean, he I think he's been doing it for a long enough stretch at this point for me to say that Evangelista has found another gear.
Is underpaid? And,
well, maybe. Maybe so. But, I mean, I think this level from him is what we've always kind of thought he had in him. You know, I don't know that he's ever going to be, you know, some 80, 90-point guy. But, like, right now, the way he's playing, he's probably a 55, 60-point guy if he plays at this level for an entire year. That's pretty good. Like, you'll take that. So, I think he's given them a spark. Obviously, when Forsberg gets going. And O'Reilly, you know, I know if you ask him earlier in the year, he's had one good year in the history of the NHL.
Yeah.
He is playing probably right up there with the best hockey he's played as a member of the Predators. Which then, I mean, the other thing this does, Joe, is it's like, well, okay, all these guys are playing really well right now, and they've found their way back into the playoff race, and they're much more fun to watch, and all that's great. Also, it's like, well, you felt like maybe a few weeks ago that Stamkos was going to be untradeable, and now he's clearly not. Like, if he keeps playing like this, people will be calling about Steven Stamkos. Ryan O'Reilly, we know people are going to be calling about. So it's like, what do you do if you're Trotz? It's like, do you ride this out and see if you can make the wild card in the playoffs? Or do you take advantage of these guys playing really well and sell them and get pretty good returns for them? That one's going to be interesting.
Get a call from Nick Saban. You know, Barry would really like some home playoff games. Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's real. The business side of the organization would like home playoff games.
Their record since he took over is pretty good.
That is a good point.
I mean, took over is probably not the right word.
Yeah.
Their record since he joined the organization, pretty good.
Yeah. Getting at just all those Newt Rockne speeches is really working right now.
I think he like sat down in a room and recorded some when he first got hired here. It's like, all right, and the hands get going.
You need to get off your ass, Luke Evangelista. Just put a different name each time.
I would love one time. There needs to be video of this. I hope it happens at some point of him coming in there and doing the lineup card.
That'd
like
be great.
Of the starting lineup. We got Stammer. We got Factor. It would be awesome.
Juice.
That does need to happen. Absolutely needs to happen.
I mean, they get Clark Lee in there doing it.
Sure.
Get Saban in there doing it.
Clark Lee's a better coach.
There's a hot take. 615-737-1025, our phone number. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad is coming up next. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will be with us at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 The Game.
Yeah, I worry about it all the time.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
We're gout free.
Yeah.
On the program this morning.
Yeah.
Would you rather have foot pain, gout, or torn up stomach?
And also let me know if I'm going to die if I'm ripping my stomach lining by taking 3 Pepcids in 1 hour.
You guys, just all of you are so damn soft.
What'd you say, Hodor?
Hodor.
Door number 2. Here's a man. It's a quarterback. Hit him.
Kick this ass for a man. That's all. Kick my ass. Enjoy. Come on. I'm not asking. I'm telling with this. Kick my ass.
Well, I just want to apologize in advance for my performance today.
This is a low T alert.
So I don't like all the sex, man.
It is time for the Rex Rant.
I knew that was coming.
Brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Heal from the inside out. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net.
I knew that last one was going to find its way in
I'm
there.
I'm sure it will be a repeat offender.
Just for anyone who didn't listen earlier, I was referring to why I don't like Game of Thrones. It's the excessive sex and the excessive violence. Why do we have to have this stuff? Why does it have to be just so, like, or like you have to turn away at times?
The violence,
why?
The violence stays. The sex part kind of goes away after the first season or two. It's not as bad. It's like a hook.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean I tried to watch it with Katie. She loves it. I think she's watched it like multiple times. Like, you got issues, bro. But I know people love the show. I just, yeah, I don't like all the sex.
Keep adding to it.
Yeah, there we go. Already said it. It's already a drop. You may as well just keep saying it over and over again. I've got a lot of things I could complain about. You know, we just had like a 2-week trip to Florida with my side of the family and Katie's side of the family, and shopping and driving and all this stuff. But you know what? I think I'm going to choose violence today, and I'm going to go back to Adam Sparks. And that's a great point, and I want to make the point. It's very simple. Tennessee fans, Diego Pavia would be one of your all-time favorite Vols if he did everything exactly the same in an orange uniform. I want somebody to seriously try to argue with me on this. I want you to really try to come out and say, oh no, we would not tolerate that sort of behavior in Knoxville. I mean, it really is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard, and yet it is out there. People actually claiming they wouldn't like Pavia because he's classless, because he said F all the voters. Oh, my God, what a crime against humanity.
Haven't you ranted about this?
But not that part, though. Okay, okay. I know. But not that part. Not the part about the Vols fans, because I ranted about all the, yeah, you know, Reese Davis. Oh, I'm glad he didn't. Shut up, man. But the Vols fans who, like, seriously, and Sparks put it perfectly. If Vanderbilt fans can be like, this guy's amazing, then it is very simple. If you win, but also if you win and you piss off the opponents, then your fans love you double for that, and you would love him. Please argue with me.
I don't think you can. I mean, look, the baseball comparison I think is a perfect analogy here, right? Like, think back to the 2022 Tennessee team. I mean, think back to Tony Vitello in general, right? Like, it's a pretty good comparison. I know he's a coach. Pavi's a player, so it's different. But personality-wise, like, when Vanderbilt fans hated Tony Vitello, Tony Pavia. What a combination that would be. Tony Vitello. But can you imagine?
What if he adopted him?
Yeah, it's Tony Pavia.
Diego adopted Tony.
Might need to at some point. But, like, most people around the country, I understand Vanderbilt's probably not a great example because they have Tim Corbin, so that's pretty good. But most teams around the country, if Tony Vitello was your coach, you'd be like, yep, that's pretty cool. I like that. That's good stuff. Same thing with Pavia, quarterback.
100%. And actually, it's a great way to flip it around, too. Like, so Caleb says, well, he'll never be in an orange uniform, so fart him, LOL. And that's great. You should hate him.
Sure.
Totally hate your rival. and all that, and you can whatever somebody does, you can rip on that. But I'll flip it around. So, and Vanderbilt fans will get mad about this, but they're wrong on this too. Kim Corbin and Tony Vitello, I almost said Bobby, are very, very different people, obviously.
Tony Corbin.
Yeah. And he actually probably should adopt him. teach him some manners. No, but seriously, Tim Corbin is as class as it gets and all that stuff. Of course, he is. And it's a great program, and Vanderbilt fans are very proud of him. And they should be. And so when Vitello came in and all that stuff, it was Vanderbilt fans more than anybody. It was like, they're ruining the game. You, Vanderbilt fans, would love Tony Vitello if he were your coach too, by the way. Argue with me on that. You can't. None of you can argue with any of this.
I agree.
I rest my case. You know, someone made a great point. I think the loudest fan base about all this beyond Tennessee fans is Indiana fans, you know, because Mendoza and what, they had the little thing that said F Indiana,
yeah,
right?
They did.
I love, someone made the point, I think it was on their text line, it was like, these Indiana fans who were calling him classless for like half a century defended Bobby Knight.
Well, there's that.
Oh, the general. he's got a lot of class. Yeah, I mean, seriously. It is very simple. It is if your person is in your uniform and wins, then your thumbs up. If your person wins and pisses off other people that you beat, oh, it's way more intense of a love. And I'd love to see the alternative reality of Diego Pavia playing for the Vols.
It would. I mean, maybe he'll get some more eligibility transfer. Maybe that's Tennessee's quarterback solver this offseason.
There you go.
We do have a Notre Dame fan that says, Notre Dame fan here, I can promise you we would not accept
Pavia. Oh, yeah. Okay. Are you seriously saying this? I mean, it's just I'm going to assume you're just trolling. I'm not going to take that comment seriously. Because I'm just assuming trolling.
By the
yes, way. Notre Dame, we only have the finest gentlemen in the land. Shut up.
By the way, did you see Lincoln Riley yesterday talking about the Notre Dame stuff?
He's an
absolute
terrible.
Idiot.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Well, if Notre Dame was true to their word and wanted to play anytime, any place.
These coaches solutions. In college right now are so juvenile. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and the whole thing, and you had a good rant. I will say, like, after reading everything about it and hearing everything about it, like, I do blame both sides. I do.
Sure.
Like, I blame Notre Dame, too. But, yes, Lincoln Riley in
particular.
He's a snake.
He's,
Since when does it become cool for coaches to troll? Like, shouldn't we be adults setting good examples? And here they are just acting like a bunch of trolls out here for their kids and their college. Like, grow up a little bit.
I'm just glad Lincoln Riley talked because
ridiculous
earlier this year.
Yeah.
Thought that may not be a thing
yeah,
anymore.
No, not talking to media anymore. By the way, is he good? Is he that good of a coach, Lincoln Riley?
Not going very well.
Yeah.
Oklahoma seems fine.
They seem fine without him.
Yeah. Seems like, you know, not wanting to play Notre Dame kind of fits in with how he's doing as a coach at USC.
615-737.
I like how we turned this into a Lincoln Riley rip.
We did.
Yay!
615-737-1025, our phone number. Charles Robinson is with us. Coming up next, we'll get into the Titans, get into all things NFL with him. And his bowl season, the Game Nashville Sports Network, your home for college football bowl games, presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and Twin Peaks. Today on Sports Talk 830, starting at 1 o'clock, it's Coastal Carolina versus Louisiana Tech in the Independence Bowl. And then on 102.5 The Game following the Music City Bowl, it'll be USC, Big Lincoln Riley, taking on TCU in the Alamo Bowl. For a list of games carried on the Game Nashville Sports Network, visit thegamenashville.com/bowl games. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.